Well, you can't grow, so to speak, without collaborating. So I'm collaborating with the earth on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I've got to work with it. I've got to figure out what it needs and then wait for it to tell me. Collaboration with people who feel in tune with the earth, with the world. Collaboration is something I think we kind of do every day, but it's different kind of thought. You can't run a garden or a farm by yourself. You can plant by yourself, but if you're doing it on a larger level, you need community. And that's a whole other collaboration. Understanding their needs, understanding your needs, working together. Sometimes you're not even speaking the same language, but you speak the language of the earth and life.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development. In our second season, we focus on stories of collaboration generated by Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program alumni, creating positive impact in communities in New York. We explore how collaboration develops organically amongst a community of founders and how these synergistic moments create lasting impact for stakeholders and communities. Please enjoy these educational, entertaining, and inspiring conversations. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 12 with Kashawn DeBose of Cultivators and Renee Kitt of KBM Spices and Things. Kashawn and Renee, welcome to the Communitas of New York podcast. So good to have both of you here. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, so we're going to get into today's conversation, but before we dive into all the things, if each of you could tell us a little bit more about your respective companies, Cultivators, and KBM Spices and Things.
So I'm the founder of Cultivators. We were recently awarded a 501c3, so we now have that status, and our goal with the organization is to use nature as a way to address our mental health and our well-being. Here in New York, we have a ton of organizations that do focus on green spaces and garden spaces, community gardens and things like that. And I think that it's assumed that there's a mental well-being to that piece of being in a green space, help with your mental health. But I haven't seen any organizations that really just focus on the mental health component of it. So my goal is to use those spaces as a way to remind people that, hey, if you can get outside and get some air and touch some grass, you'll feel better for it. So we have different activities, whether it's outdoors or indoors, community members, schools, gardens, to where we have these nature-based activities to address our mental well-being, which came from my own journey of mental health, but also trying to find and identify self-care.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Kashawn. And Renee.
Yes. So I'm Renee Kitt, KBM Spices and Things. My venture is about a healing journey in the South Bronx. So we're three people, various backgrounds. We came together. That's Anna Moran, Fade Bonus. We came together. We did the Bronx Hot Sauce. It was basically a contest out of Bronx Canasta, and we won. Wow. So then in KBM Spices and Things by our last names. It's about using traditional knowledge, growing produce in the South Bronx, and using all that knowledge and our various backgrounds, combine it together, and then we would create products. So we used tamarind. The tamarind part we had to get because, you know, we only get the leaves here. And then we would grow the cilantro, the onions, and various products, combined it together into a value-added product. And then we also would have our traditions, understanding about how plants are used to deal with health issues. So we would grow things like ginger and turmeric and then use those in things like honey. Mm-hmm. And so you have your infused honeys as well as another product that we would have. And then with that, we can also use the leaves of the products for teas. Or if we were cooking, if we had fish, we would wrap it in turmeric leaves. So it's using every part of the product we can, and that would bring us a sustainable world. Sustained through the products, sustained through the soil, sustainability through the seed, and then sustained through community.
That is so beautiful. And I love that you talk about using that knowledge, Renee. And It makes me think about some of the gaps that the education system and also the health system has. So let's talk about that. So for both of you, what gaps in education and health, as well as essential elements, do you feel are lacking in community but are being addressed by the focus of your respective venture? So Renee, I want to start with you on this one.
Well, one of the keys to health is soil.
Yes.
We're planting in soil. So if you don't take care of the soil and the earth, you're basically dooming yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that's something we have to understand. It's not just about putting a product in your body. It's how do you maintain it from the beginning? So if you protect the soil, you can plant seeds in it. In some cases, seeds come from other countries, and then it's a form of acclimation, working with it to sustain yourself, to continue to sustain yourself. Just because you've come to somewhere different doesn't mean you can no longer have your traditional foods. So that's part of it. At the same time, one of the most important things I would say is about the various forms of medicines. What you eat is a medicine. Mm-hmm. Beets are a medicine. Ginger is a medicine. Turmeric is a medicine. Of course, you have to understand the contradictions, but a lot of what we do and how we are can be sustained in our health through what we eat. But then I can't just go and tell someone, oh, eat healthy. If you don't have the means, if your neighborhood does not have food, you know, everyone has produce, lovely, but what does it look like? Mm-hmm. Is it the best? Is it run down? You may be the center where food is distributed from, but it can bypass you. And you only get the worst of the product. You're not getting the best. So I just can't tell someone, well, eat healthy. There's a lot more to it than that. On a very micro level, where it's just within the neighborhood, to then where the city, then on a regional basis, the state, and then also how we are funding things. And so with what's going on with the federal government, we're dealing with major food issues. You know, we have pantries, but, you know, a lot of the food is canned, and then we're dealing with salt and sugar as a preservative. So it's a lot more and a lot bigger picture. And that's where collaboration and community comes in.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Perfect. And for you, Kashan?
For me, in this venture, there's the mental health component, but also the lack of accessibility. So, you know, we live in a borough where resources are very stretched, right? I have colleagues who work in the mental health space, and I give them kudos because they're dealing with things that we have never seen before in our lifetime. Couple that with the other various socioeconomic factors in our borough, it presents a challenge. So when I look at the kids, you know, I've experienced working in schools here in the Bronx. You're looking at our students and our children, and you realize that they're under pressures that we've never seen in our lifetime. So you look at that and then you wonder, well, what can you do to help? And you realize that there's green spaces all throughout this borough. In fact, there's a study that came out that said of all the five boroughs, the Bronx is the greenest borough in all five boroughs. Mm. But it's number five when it comes to accessibility, meaning that you have these beautiful spaces, but you can't get to it. It takes you 2-3 buses to get there, mm-hmm. A couple of trains. You know, it's challenging. So for me, when I look at that and I try to figure out, well, what helped me on my self-care journey, my mental health journey, it was nature. It was getting a plant and watching a plant going from a seed to just completely blooming. It was building a garden bed, just small garden bed in my backyard, and just watching things just grow. And realizing the joy that I had in that and asking myself, well, how can I translate that into my community to where we can all have the same feeling, right? When you talk to people who garden or you talk to people who's in a green park, you talk to people who are embedded in nature, they genuinely feel different. They feel happier. There's a lot of studies around it, but truly no one really ever makes a connection to the mental health. So then I asked myself, well, if I can just show people that these simple things that you could do in nature can help your well-being, maybe you go throughout your day a little bit happier, right? So yes, the construction is going on in your neighborhood, the horns are blaring, the ambulances, the sirens are going. But at least, oh, if you could just have that moment to nature, whether it's a small plant in your home, whether it's going to your local community garden, whether it's finding the time to go to Van Cortlandt Park, build a terrarium, any one of those things, that might help chisel away at some of the stressors that come with being in New York City. So for me, it was a matter of like that mental health component, but also understanding that in this borough alone, there's a lot of green spaces, but we're not utilizing them in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that and just sharing some of those tidbits for both of you, how it is affecting community, because I think that's what people need to hear and see and how you were able to do something about it. So I really want to get a little bit more into you all's story. So let's start by talking more about like how you both got involved into agriculture and horticulture. And what were some of your first experiences with the spaces that you all are in?
How did I get into this? Oh, well, I was an inventory manager. I was tired of it. I had a year break. Then I went into a culinary training course, and they happened to have a farm there. I ended up realizing I like farming more. But also, I live in Chelsea, where there are many pressures, lots of gentrification. I think everyone knows that. But at the same time, supermarkets were closing, and then I thought, I better learn to grow food. And so then it was a journey of seeking a place to grow food, because part of the problem is if you live in certain neighborhoods, there are no green spaces, or the green spaces are private property, or it's thought as a business district, so there are no community gardens around. So my journey took me to Hell's Kitchen. That didn't work. And then I ended up in East Harlem eventually, because they have green spaces. But when you think about why they have those spaces, that's another story. And it's a story of disinvestment. So at the same time, you come to those realizations that people think of where you live as a high opportunity community, but there are certain things you just don't have. And one of them is a lack of green space. And so from there, I took the journey to farm school. Eventually, I got in. And then I'm now at Kelly Street Garden, and then I became parts of many other gardens. So that's how my journey came, because I was seeking a way to feed myself. And I guess you could say feed myself on an emotional, physical, and mental level. So my hands are in the soil on a regular occasion. They're not in the best shape, but I feel better than I've had in years. So yeah, that's how I came to be where I'm at, with a lot of collaboration and cultivation of relationships. So yeah, that's brought me to here.
Yeah, that is very powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Renee.
For me, there was a school that I worked for in the South Bronx, to where I was nowhere near any agriculture or horticultural experiences, but there were two things that happened to me in that school that I believe in, like, alignment. The first thing was I met a science teacher who had built a beautiful terrarium in his science class. And I asked him about it. I was curious about it. And he was kind enough to make one for me. And then one day, one of my kids accidentally went by it and just, like, broke it. So when I went and explained it to him, he said to me, well, you can go and recreate it. So he gave me some, like, YouTube videos and some tips, some things to buy. And I came home and just sat there for hours trying to construct the perfect terrarium. And then I got lost in time. Like, I think I may have started at, like, let's just say 3 hypothetically. And by the time I looked up at the time, it was like 6 or 7 o'clock. And then I found myself just, like, very at peace. Like, I built this beautiful thing. But also for that temporary moment, I lost myself in something, like, positive. And to Renee's point, like, hand in soil, putting, like, nice rocks that I found in the neighborhood all around, sticks and twigs, things like that. It was amazing. The other thing that I witnessed in terms of nature and mental health was at that school, I was asked to help support build a small garden beds on the terrace of the school. And what I saw was a student who was often a subject of disciplinary conversations really enjoyed the space in a way that I've never seen. So I've seen the same student, fortunately, be disruptive for a number of reasons. I saw the same student in the soil giggling and laughing just at some of the plants and stuff that was there. It seemed like it calmed him down. So when I did some research and I spoke to that same science teacher about the terrarium, he mentioned to me that there's a thing where nature calms you. That study goes all the way back to ancient Egypt, to where they were sending people into gardens just to, you know, clear their head. So once I kind of put two and two together, my own journey with a terrarium and watching a student benefit from that, I just went down a rabbit hole, did a ton of research, and the library, the Allerton Public Library, was kind enough to let me do just a workshop that I paid for out of pocket to just teach the community about terrariums. And from there, parents came up to me at the end of the class and said they loved it. When am I doing this again? The students were happy to take something home. And then from there, I just started doing research and just started going down this journey. It was pretty much that school that introduced me organically to this idea that there's power in nature, that there's a way for you to just embrace what's around us to bring you to an element of calmness. And some people would say that's actually our natural state, to where we should be around nature. We should be in that state. So it was that school that introduced me to this entire path.
That's such a beautiful story. And for both of you, just hearing how personal, how close, and I hear about, like, the peace and the joy and just loving what you both are doing, and then following and transitioning from having this personal experience to now having this entrepreneur experience. Did either of you have the knowledge of how to run a business before you started your businesses, or did you just have to hit the ground running? And I know, Renee, for you, you mentioned going to farm school. And so did that even give you that business knowledge that you needed?
Not really. It gave me the knowledge of how to do value-added products. Mm-hmm. So the way I got the business knowledge was going to different courses throughout, everything from SBS, the city's small business. But frankly, you know, you go to different classes in different places. It's easier to do it in one place, like Anna Moran, who's the M in KBM. She found out about Communitas, and that's how we really started learning about business, taking the various classes, the whole course, learning how to put together various pieces. You know, what's a one-pager? I had no idea how to do that. Didn't even know you had to do it. How to deal with a business plan. So those are the things I learned in the program. Because, you know, always having to learn about business is not easy. You have to figure out where to start. How to understand what is an entity. Like, right. What is an entity, really? Understanding what an S-Corp is, what a B-Corp, different responsibilities of each. What is a board? How to look at a contract. How to network. How to meet people. How to have pro bono services and where to look for them. A lot of that came from here. You know, start small, think big. You know, all this networking and understanding of the different places that you can go to get resources, it really began really in Communitas, but also it was a steady place. I mean, a lot of these places are, you're going here, you're going there, you're plugging in here, you're plugging in there. For amount of time, you're in one place, you can ask questions, you have resources, and then it's not like when you're done, you're through with the program, it continues. So those resources are always there. Edward is always sending me various things, making sure I network, meet people, people not just from the cohort I was in, but people who are from other cohorts.
Edward Greenwood is the head of Venture Resources for Communitas America.
It's just a relationship that continues, like any relationship through time. So that is something you're always learning. And even after you're through the courses, you're always learning about business because you always have to deal with your customer base. And that's a continuing learning experience. And so, yeah, you're always learning about business. You never stop.
Definitely. And shout out to Communitas for cultivating that. What about you, Keshawn?
So I thought I had a fairly good understanding of it just because prior to doing this work, I worked in a lot of back offices for organizations, but you realize slowly that when it's your own is different.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always think Communitas because when I first had this idea, I applied for the cohort with this idea. And it was from there I was able to get kind of a crash course, but also a lot of information and resources just around how to start a business, from value proposition to understanding your SWOT analysis, to understanding your corporate structure. And it was in that cohort that I was able to kind of understand what I need to do now to take the appropriate next steps. I did benefit from having a little bit of knowledge of a not-for-profit just because I've worked in them. It's always troublesome when you have your own thing. So it's different for you to run someone else's as opposed to building your own. So from there, I was able to get support from Communitas there, doing my own research, reading things and just asking people. But we're on a Communitas podcast. But I will say, if it wasn't for Communitas, and I always tell Sun Moon and Edward this, I don't think that I would have gotten this far without that organization. So I would say that a lot of my knowledge of making this an entrepreneurial journey came from being in that Communitas cohort.
Sun Moon Jung is the executive director of Communitas America. And speaking of Communitas, for us, this season is all about collaboration. And Renee, I know you've spoken at length about just the importance of collaboration, cultivating and building those relationships. And you both intersect in terms of the kind of spaces and sectors in which you both do this important work. So with that being said, I want to ask you both about collaboration within the community. So how do each of you work in community with those around you? And what do those spaces of education and cultivation look like?
Collaboration. Well, you can't grow, so to speak, without collaborating. So I'm collaborating with the earth on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I've got to work with it. Got to figure out what it needs and then wait for it to tell me. Collaboration with people who feel in tune with the earth, with the world. Collaboration is something I think we kind of do every day, but it's a different kind of thought. You can't run a garden or a farm by yourself. You can plant by yourself, but if you're doing it on a larger level, you need community. And that's a whole other collaboration. Understanding their needs, understanding your needs, working together. Sometimes you're not even speaking the same language, but you speak the language of the earth and life. And you all can kind of understand that. Or you're using hand signals and you're collaborating in teaching each other another language. You can't do things alone. We are in this world, interconnected, somewhat dependent on one another. I think some people feel that, maybe some people don't. I was hoping COVID would get us to a better place in understanding that we need collaboration, that we need mutual aid. To me, it's just something that's normally there. You have to collaborate. You have to work with the tools, everything from people, not that people are tools, well, depending on who you speak with about. But also, you have to work in an interconnected way because so much is not isolated. Everything affects one another. So you have to collaborate on various levels because if you don't, it's not going to work. And I think we're starting to realize that in a small way. We just need to get to the bigger leap.
Renee, I just have to say, you put that so beautifully, like collaborating with the earth, and it just start like there, and then how that transitions and transpires into other ways of collaboration. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. And so what about you, Kashan?
Yeah, I think for me, in this work, I always look to collaborate, and I never really put a framing around it, but just knowing that because this work is about nature and because it's about mental health, I think that it's important for me to make sure that it's organic as possible. So with being in this space, but also being in our community, being able to just meet people that understand the mission that we're doing, but they might be moving through a different path. So for me, I'm always looking to collaborate. So there are times where I email Edward about an opportunity that I have and just asking him if maybe somebody can want to go in on it with me. Sometimes it's going to, I have a good relationship with our city council here, asking them about there are any opportunities there. So just work with someone with this work. But for me, I've always walked into this space with the assumption that this would be a journey, right? It's kind of all hands on deck. Like we're dealing with a challenge here that no one has a true solution. So it's important to make sure that you get as many people possible that can help you try to deal with this challenge at hand. So for me, I always walk into these spaces with the assumption of collaboration. And just for me, myself, I always consider myself to be a helpful person. So I may not be the strongest person there, the fastest person or the quickest thinker, but I will sit in there with you and we'll figure it out together. Like even if we have to sit there all day or all night. So I guess I've always considered myself, whether it was this space or any other space, a true collaborator. And equally, I'm always looking to collaborate with someone else.
I love that. And speaking of collaboration, have either of you directly collaborated with each other or some of the other Communitas alumni?
Let's see. No, well, Kashan and I have not collaborated with each other. I think we came close to it, but it didn't quite work out. Other Communitas alumni. I've collaborated with Judy Desiree. Our relationship actually was before Communitas as well. Yeah. And then one day I walked into an event and there she was. I'm like, oh, you too. Okay, nice to meet you. Daniel from Soul Cacao, we've actually got his chocolate husk. That's Kelly Street Garden where I work. So that was a collaboration. I met him and then I'm like, oh, Soul Cacao, oh, we got your husk at one time. And I'm like, okay. So yeah, Michaela Jane Elvey, worked with her. So yeah, I have collaborated.
The Communitas Ventures alumni Renee refers to are Michaela Elvey with her venture, BIPOC Leadership Advancement at Camp Coalition, founder Judy Desiree with her venture Uptown and Boogie Health Project, and Daniel Maloney, one of the three founders of Soul Cacao Craft Chocolates. By the way, you can hear Daniel Maloney in conversation on this season of Communitas of New York. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure. I know Renee and I had, we tried, I'm not sure what happened, but I know Edward had introduced us to seeing if there was a potential alignment there, which it sounded like it was, but we just didn't get the chance. I will say that I have collaborated with other members of Communitas just through being in the same space, but also through introduction. So I've worked with Selma, with Agrikunami. A funny story about that, her and I were both in the New York Botanical Gardens Grow More Vegetables course. And she came to a workshop that we had when we was building garden beds for a school. So I met her there. We all exchanged information, like everyone there at the time. And then I was looking at a Communitas newsletter where they announced a new cohort, and she was in it. So I texted her and said, hey, if you need any help, if I could be a thought partner, you know, I've gone through this amazing experience, let me know. And we connected. But then from there, we actually worked together at a school, a high school, the International Community High School down in the South Bronx. I've worked with Conchetta from Wildflower Books. We worked on a grant that we had received. I've worked with Rena at Start Lighthouse. Actually had a cool collaboration with Isaiah that does the hardwood floors. We had mulch I needed for a project. He just had mulch in the community. So I went over there and picked it up. I worked with Jakia. Whenever I get an opportunity, I think the first thing I do is I look to see if someone in the Communitas can kind of benefit from that collaboration.
And the Communitas Ventures alumni Kashawn refers to are Selma Nunez and her venture, Agrikumami Consulting, Kenshetta Gleason with her venture, Wildflowers and Books, Isaiah Bauer with his venture, A Floor Man's Dream, Jakia Pearson with her venture, Vibrant Seeds, and Rena Madani with her venture, Start Lighthouse. You can hear Rena Madani in conversation alongside Ventures alumni Amir Mustafa, founder of Art Defined Productions, also on this season of Communitas of New York.
I do it because I'm trying to become well-versed in this space, but I also feel like sometimes someone might just need an opportunity. And it's like, why not do it together, right? Like, why not benefit each other mutually from this opportunity? So I will say that I get an opportunity. I always look to see if I can get someone else to partner with me on it.
Yeah. You both are doing really well when we speak about collaboration and truly working together in relationships. And also shout out to Edward for also introducing you two. And so with that, in your work, is there a particular age group that you all encounter the most? And let's start with you, Kashawn.
I think for me, it's between middle school and high school.
Yeah.
So it's between maybe like 12 to like 17. Organically, I have worked with elementary schools. And to me, they seem to be the one that appreciate it the most. Mm-hmm. I think that when we're doing this work, we get two types of responses. When we're working with the older students, we're able now to kind of tap in and explain a little bit more on the calmness of nature as a pulp, you know, that can help you down the line. But when it comes to the little ones, they just want to get dirty. They mm-hmm. just want to throw the soy all over the place and they want to like play with the plants and things like that. And it's a joy to see. So while we're not able to speak to the benefits of the mental health with our younger students, I do love just seeing them in nature and in garden spaces, which hopefully can plant that seed so that they can go down the line and be more open to that as they get older. But I will say in this work, the majority, it's been like middle school students and high school students.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I can definitely see that with the age differences. So yeah.
Two different responses.
Yes, for sure. And what about you, Renee?
In terms of age, we really work on an intergenerational model. Mm-hmm. So everyone can work together. Intergenerational model is basically the model we work with because we want knowledge to be passed back and forth between peoples. Mm-hmm. It's a way of sustaining. So it's another effort in sustainability because I think that's the best way. Because my philosophy is a very simple one. We're all in it together till we take our last breath. And so I don't just want to concentrate on one age. We want to work with all people, no matter the age. Each of us has something to represent. It's also a stronger form of collaboration because we're pulling knowledge and viewpoints from different directions. And that really works really well together because someone may know something because one's older. Another one may have a different idea because one's younger. You all come together and figure things out. It makes everything more resilient, stronger, thinking differently. It gets the synapses working and snapping in all sorts of directions because someone may think of something that you haven't, or maybe someone worked in the soil, or maybe someone has been playing in the soil and has learned from an intergenerational, from another elder, or maybe someone was older and didn't have that knowledge, but someone younger has always had that knowledge and then worked together. I just like the interchanging of information. It's another way of connecting, another way of pollinating, another way of just cultivating growth in all people, how we just can keep staying connected and keep working. So we really work on an intergenerational basis.
I love that. And I love that you broke that down for us on what it means and what it actually looks like. And it sounds like both of you are grounded in the Bronx. Where do you geographically do you spend most of your time?
I spend time in Chelsea, where I live. I spend time in East Harlem in the Bronx, where I'm either a member of Community Garden or I work there. So my time is spread between, I guess you say, three different places.
Mm-hmm. For me, I would say it's been in the Bronx. In terms of geographical in the Bronx, I would say definitely the northeast section, like Williamsbridge, Baychester, Wakefield. In the South Bronx, so maybe Mott Haven, Morrisina. I've worked with students in the Fordham area. So I would say it's throughout. I live in the northeast section of the Bronx, so it's easier for me to make connections there. all the opportunities that I've gotten in terms of someone reaching out from work that they've seen in the past or just out of curiosity, it's been in the South Bronx. So it's been all over.
Okay. And Kashawn, you also mentioned one of the things before about the attention span of the youth in these green spaces. And Renee, you also mentioned Synapsis. So do you get the opportunity to observe collaborative spirit of the people as they continually participate in these hands-on physical experiences that you're involved in? And also, in addition to that, have either of you seen a breakthrough moments in this respect?
We had a grand opportunity with a school in Castle Hill. Mm-hmm. And what I saw was, because it was a long-term grant opportunity, what you saw was students, you kind of see them, they have their friends, and they kind of merge together. But what you saw was, before we got there with the next session, you would just see ideas from them. So for example, this grant opportunity that we had, the goal was for us to utilize the green space that the school had with the help of Conchetta from Wildflower Books. There was an author opportunity. So we would bring in an author. The author would read her book. We would give the students a book, and then we would pair that with the nature activity. What you saw in those spaces with these students was that once they kind of got the sense of what we were trying to do, you kind of started to see them organically start to work ahead of us, which was beautiful to see. Mm. So for example, we would start our seeds. We would ask the students what type of things they want to grow in their spaces. They'll give us the idea. We'll go pick it up. And then we'll start the season in classroom. As we got outside, before we could start mapping where we wanted to grow these different items, the students was telling us where they wanted the stuff to go. So they knew from the last class what they had selected. But now in this space, they're looking to say, like, okay, we want the sunflowers over here. We want our herbs, our basil. We want our rosemary over here. And I just thought that was beautiful, because we always kept telling them, like, this is your space.
Yeah.
We're just here to help facilitate this process and help be a good steward here. But we're going to leave the school. This is your neighborhood. This is your community. We're just here to help. So it was always good that these students took the initiative to just tell us where they wanted these things, that we just simply followed their path. So I thought that was cool, because sometimes earlier when we were talking about it, you don't always get the sense that some students are receptive to dealing in nature. But to see them already kind of map out where they wanted these things to go, to me, was impressive. It could have been organic just because they were friends. But the fact that as friends, they thought about this and said, hey, this is where we want these things to go, to me, I thought was pretty cool.
That is cool. And what about you, Renee?
I've seen it in the garden, where usually sometimes children, like an older child, will be helping out a younger child, and they'll be working together. Like, one will have a problem and then the older child comes over and they start working together. So that's really a beautiful thing, a moment of taking care and caring for one another. A person will use the dibbler to dig a hole, and then another person will come behind and put the transplant in, and then another person will do the top dressing, or they'll get around together and start weeding and working together in a space. You see one person, and then group comes over, and then they all talk and collaborate on the task at hand. So yeah, that's kind of like a natural thing that happens. Someone will start watering from one part, and then the other holes will come from the other part, and they'll just work together to close it down. So yeah, collaboration and connections continue to happen.
That is so beautiful. I love that. And Renee, following on this thread, so KBM Spices and Things, you have the tagline on Instagram, collective wisdom, all cultural tradition in a jar. Could you share a specific example of how that kind of knowledge transfer manifests? And are there any specific sources of wisdom or even knowledge that you have seen intersecting or mingling to that proverbial jar or in that proverbial jar?
Well, that's how we created the product.
Yeah.
So Anna, Guatemalan, Faye, Trini, me, second generation American, but West Indian. So we kind of put it all together when we actually came up with the product. Everything from tamarind to what peppers we use, to how we put things together. That was basically that. Then also, when you walk through the garden with people, like, and they've brought their mother, and then they're there with them, and then like a brother's with them. Next thing you know, the parent is telling them about singing nettles. So like in one case, the parent was telling their daughter about how when they were a child, their parent used singing nettles to punish them. Singing nettles, you know, a whack, and you feel it. But some people used it as punishment. Another person used it for arthritis. Cuban oregano. Oh, I know that. Oh, we call it sticky thyme. We call it broadleaf. We call it this. So we use it for stomach issues. So that's how the knowledge is passed, just by seeing it in the garden. And next thing you know, they're talking to one another. So it's bringing back memories. memories of how you used it or your family used it, and then you're talking about it. Oh, I use mint for digestive issues. Oh, no, you can use it like this. We use collards. Ah, well, you know, you can use that as a wrap as well. Or I've had a history of cancer, so I should be eating beets. Or can we make a paste with the turmeric? Mm-hmm. So that is just walking through the garden and having people just being there together, walking there together. Or we have someone who comes into the garden and it just pops things into memory. Or you're having an herbalist workshop and they're talking about what you can use this plant for. Mm-hmm. And then somebody will chime in and say, oh, but in my culture, this is where we use this from. And it's just a total understanding of how. So that's why we say, yes, the traditions in a char, but the cultural knowledge is there. I mean, as we were growing up, we weren't really listening to our parents, not the deep listening.
Yeah.
You know, they would say we use this for that. And we go, nah. Then you get older and you realize, oh, I better get this down.
Yeah.
I better start listening. I need to record this information that's been installed in me, and I got to dig it back up through the recesses of your mind and your time. And you got to remember these conversations. And then you go, oh, I better go see grandma. I got to get this down. I got to watch what she's doing now. Because when you were younger, you just took it all for granted. But now you're like, ah. Oh, I missed my opportunity. Well, let me go back and get that opportunity again.
Yes, that is so true. Keeping those recipes and just passing it down and all the things, passing it across and learning about the different cultures. I love that. And also, speaking of products, so how does it work for you all when it comes to selling or giving away samples of any of the produce or yield from the land? So perhaps you can talk about these varied approaches. And Kashan, also, if the youth are involved in distributing anything that they yield?
For me, we don't really sell anything. It's more about teaching them about these various things that they can do on the land, but mm-hmm. also, you know, indoors. So anything that we do with them, they keep. The goal is for them to understand these are their items. This is their work. This is their passion. This is their opportunity that they built into it. So anything that we yield, even the school I previously mentioned when they were growing herbs, they were growing tomatoes or things like that. That's for them all to decide how they want to distribute it. So I believe at the end of the year, they just gave the students an opportunity to just harvest and just take the things home. Anything that's done with the students and the community and the parents and the grandparents, they take those things home for them. It's all for them.
That's good. And what about you, Renee? How does it work with the selling and everything else?
With the selling, well, when we start, we usually do tastings. Mm-hmm. So basically, we usually partner with a community garden. In some cases, we may be there for the day or we're there at a workshop. And so we can basically have the product there. We'll have mangoes or something else, and people can do their dipping and taste. When it comes to selling, we have the established relationships with other markets to do that. Small batches are made, and then we can just put them out that way. So that's the selling part with KBM Spices and Things. So when we were doing surveys, it was just putting them out on the table. We got feedback. So we understood what people liked about the product, how much they were willing to spend, especially if it was people from the Bronx, a value added product. When it comes to where I work, Kelly Street Garden, its basic mission mm-hmm. is not to sell. It's basically to deal with the mental, physical, and emotional events that happened. And so selling is not a part of Kelly Street Garden. Everything is distributed free of charge, workshops, everything. Nothing is to be sold here. So that's how that's dealt with. Distributed fresh free produce. You're not telling people eat healthy, but they can't afford it. So it's just here for the community to come harvest. If we're having a market, it goes up on Instagram. People know, come and get. Mm-hmm. And that's basically how it's done.
And so in the spirit of collaboration, of course, you're partnering with different organizations, building relationships, and also collaborating. So when you are doing this, do you naturally gravitate toward particular roles and responsibilities when you are working collaboratively with other communities? And we can start with you, Kashan.
When we're collaborating, especially when it's another organization doing similar work, the goal is for us to figure out what's the shared vision.
Yeah.
And I think from there, we start to kind of drill down on what the appropriate next steps are. So I can use the grant opportunity that we had. So with this grant opportunity, we, with Conchetta from Wildflower Books, there was a literacy piece to it as well as a nature component to it. So we both share that vision of the joys of green spaces. And Connie has a passion for books of children reading. So once we figured out how to merge those, we just kind of build out from there what the steps are to make sure that we're both achieving the same thing. So whether it's her organizing the authors, if it's for me to get the materials for the students to work in the green spaces, if it's one of us being a point person for the school to communicate with, once we identified that shared vision, now we kind of drill down to figure out like what steps we have to take to achieve this goal. And then I have other opportunities where I've worked with the Mashulu Preservation Center. They have multiple beds here in the Bronx. And one of the things that we're often asked to do is to help with the tree beds, get the tree beds back healthy. And with them, it's just more of a, hey, we think that you're a subject matter experts when it comes to trees. Here's what you need. Here's some funds to help get some of the materials. We're going to leave everything up to you. We're going to leave the planning. We're going to help you get community members out here. But we're looking for you to kind of lead this. So we're going to take a step back. But we're going to ask that you kind of lead us in this journey. So it really just depends. But anytime I'm working with someone with a shared vision, I think it's important to make sure that I'm acknowledging their work and they're acknowledging mine. And then from there, we're able to kind of build and drill down from there. And I would say it's worked for me so far.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, my case, it's a conversation ahead of time, like who does what? What can you do? What can I do? And just figuring it out from there. I mean, it's sitting down, discussing if it's going to be an event, you know, what's the steps in the event? What are we going to do? Who has capacity to do this? Who has the relationships to do this? Do we bring in other people or is this something we're doing together? Who has this product? Who has this resource? And then you just kind of sit there, have a conversation, whether it's in person, whether you're going to get together in a cafe, are you doing this over Zoom? Who can do what is usually figured out ahead of time and who has the relationship and the capacity to bring this in? So it's best if you have a conversation ahead of time to know the expectations involved. So one person isn't doing all the work or it just blows up in your face. So yeah, that's kind of the best way to do it. Talk.
Yeah. And that is so key. I love that you mentioned the relationship and also the capacity to do. And that brings me to my next question on thinking about this. So with that being said, is there a particular point or any particular point in a venture's journey at which either of you think there is a right time or if there is a right way to explore collaborations?
I can kind of go off of what Renee just said about talking first. I think that's always the key. If you're trying to work with someone or there's an opportunity to work with someone, I think that initial conversation has to happen. Because on paper, it may seem like everything may make sense, right? You might read this person one pager, you might read their website and Instagram and think, oh, this might be a perfect opportunity. But then in speaking to them, you may realize that what's on paper may not represent what they're about to address. So I think that initial conversation is extremely important.
Yeah.
I know it's going to sound cliche. Also, intuitively, you have to ask yourself, does it feel right? You can learn a lot about a person just from sitting down and speaking to them and interacting with them. And then you can say to yourself whether or not this makes sense, right? So again, it could look beautiful on paper. Everything can match up in mirror. But if you meet this person, speak to this person, you might get a sense that something might go awry and you have to go with your gut because not every opportunity is going to be a good one. And what you don't want to happen is get into a collaborative conversation with a person. You start that journey and then you realize like something warned you about it before that you couldn't explain. Now all of a sudden you're kind of stuck in this space to where you can't really get out of it. So I think that initial conversation is important.
That's solid advice. And what about you, Renee?
Yeah, I agree with Kashawn because you got to really figure things out.
Yeah.
Communication is always key. If you don't communicate, everything's blown up in your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man.
And speaking of blowing up in your face, so now we've talked a lot about the work that you both are doing and how you got to this place and how it's all been great. But of course, with this journey, there are some challenges, some of the lessons and some of the things that you've had to learn along the way. So with that, for a lot of people, funding is one of those things. So I might ask, what are some of the funding sources or how do you deal with funding?
Oh, God. The money question.
The money question.
Oh, well, the hard part. Okay, so how much can you self-fund? You begin. In the case of us, because we were part of the Bronx Canasta, some of the fund they had already applied for a grant, so that made it easier.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of funding is very hard. I don't rely on city, state, or federal governments. That's a reimbursement. Mm-hmm. So I don't rely on them at all. We can rely on grants, but in many cases, we're not a 501c3, therefore it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also understanding agriculture. Where is it that you could be funded and what's your niche? And then looking there. So that's everything from partnerships. You may be something someone else needs. Understanding your need for funding. It's basically how much can you make? How much do you need to output? And then figuring out those numbers. How much do you need as a founder to actually put in the bank, to actually self-finance? Understanding what CDFs are, community development funds. What do they have? Where are they located? What are their interest rates? Do you want to become a part of them? Then what your banking is. Mm-hmm. Because some of the banking, if you have credit funds or credit institutions, they may be better for you as well. So learning about those. So like Lower East Side People's Federal Credit Union, a credit union, are the interest rate better? Some people, some organizations have to give back to community. So do they have a micro grant program, a micro loan program? That's another way to fund as well. So it's learning about all those is how to fund, making a budget of what you need to spend as well. And then once you know your budget, and how much everything's going to cost, also funding it yourself. So it's knowing your inventory, knowing when you're going to go down. Do you buy everything for the year? What can you buy in bulk? What are the best places to buy it as well? Because that also helps with your financing. Taking courses and speaking to people, especially networking, to understand how other people have done it. So the money problem is a big problem. Not being a nonprofit, but even if we were a nonprofit, you still have issues. If you have government financing, it's usually a reimbursement. They're all notoriously known for not paying on time. If you're a part of a credit union, sometimes they have problems dealing with your routing numbers. So yeah, it's on many levels, understanding the sources, where to find the sources, and do you do micro grants, micro loans, what kind of programs as well also fund startup businesses. So it's learning all that.
Yeah, that's great. Solid advice. And what about you, Keshawn?
It's been a journey. Mm-hmm. So I would say the two revenue sources that we've experienced was a grant, a few contracts here and there, but also some funding from the schools where we're doing workshops in the schools. But I will say, to kind of echo what Renee just said, even being a non-for-profit is challenging, right? Because as you're trying to apply for these foundations or these organizations that's looking to fund this work, it seems like sometimes they really are just interested in organizations that's been doing it a lot longer. So I literally have read RFPs where they discuss, we're looking for someone that's done it, you know, 5 years or more, or have over 100K in revenue and things like that. But it's like, well, we're a startup. We just started, right? So someone has to give us an opportunity. Yeah. And then you feel like, you know, when you're just kind of alone or have a small organization, you look at some of these organizations and realize they can afford a grant writer, they can afford a team, a development team to be able to build into this work. Whereas for me, I do a lot of this writing at night. I do a lot of this work at night or on the weekends where I'm like trying to get my best ideas out there and really apply for these things. So it's a challenge. A lot of times, even some of the funding that I get, you realize is not enough. And I think Renee touched on it earlier, which I love, and I believe in this as well. There's no way as a organization that we're going to do this work and then ask the people that we're trying to support to pay for anything. So there are times where I have to come out of my own pocket for supplies just because I have to see this through, right? Like even the initial budget that we gave you, things may have gone up, opportunities may have changed, but I have to see this through. So sometimes I'm in my own pocket bootstrapping to get this going. So it's a journey. It's a challenge. I've never met any entrepreneur who said that it was easy. But for me, I take pride in knowing that when it's said and done, I pray that our stakeholders are getting the opportunity that I want them to get. So it's a journey, though, for sure.
Yeah. And Keshawn, when you say that there have been other entrepreneurs as well who expressed similar sentiments on the podcast about seeing those opportunities, but it being for an organization that's more in the game a little bit longer, or managing your time and different things like that. And so for you as a founder, how do you deal with those challenges in that way mentally? And then how do you keep pressing forward and still continue to build the work and do the work?
For me, I have a mindset of no just means no. Like sometimes I think initially when I got into this work, it was exhausting just to kind of like get the rejection letter or get the no initially there. I kind of take pride in knowing that now that I've met people in this space who gets it, right? Yeah. Like initially I just thought that maybe this idea was too broad or too big for someone to receive it in that way. But now that I've met people who are in that space, who in their own way understands the mission and vision, I just keep it moving. I'll apply to 10, 20 of them. And if 19 say no, and then the 20th say maybe, I feel like it's a win. Or even if all 20 say no, it's like, all right, this 20 is out, let's go to the next 10. But I also, too, do a little bit more research and seeing strategically what these organizations may have founded. Because I've learned, too, sometimes I might be applying for a grant that may have no intention of doing anything in the mental health or nature space. So I equally look at what they funded in the past to figure out if this is a good fit, and even go as far as to kind of do research of just some of the organizations, some of the members in there. And I think that helps as well, too. But it was draining initially in the beginning, but now I just take pride in that someone is going to get it. Someone's going to understand this mission and vision, and then we're going to move forward accordingly. So I think it's maybe pride and ego that I just had to put to the side.
That's good. And you also brought up the time and state of mind, Kashawn. So how do each of you manage time in working on your respective ventures? So if demand becomes high for your services, how do you manage this while also administering your respective businesses and also doing the other things that you have to do over the week? Both of you took a breath. It's like, oh, yeah.
Okay, so look at your schedule. Look at your calendar.
Yeah.
I'm lucky I have two other people, but we're all in a business where, in a field where this is our prime time of season. So it's like, figure out added value products last end of year. So as the climate has changed, everything else has changed. So that's when we do it. Maybe December, we'll have the product by that time. Or we have to decide, okay, this time, you know, going into Labor Day, it's not as much going on. It's slowed down somewhat. People on a lot of vacation will have more time. It's hard. It's figuring out what you can do, when you can do it. It's preparing as much as possible during the time of year when allegedly everything is dormant. It may be dormant, but it still needs care and consideration and love. So yeah, it's hard. I mean, what is your capacity? Off season is where you put a lot of things, you know, Zoom meetings during lunchtime. Not always the best thing, I would say. It's not the best thing to do that. But yeah.
I would say for me to echo everything that Renee said, for me, I do a lot of my stuff at night, which is probably not the healthiest. What I find myself doing is doing a lot of research and then kind of schedule emails to go out at 8 or 9 in the morning to respect people's inbox. To Renee's point, I do a lot of stuff on my lunch break. A lot of work maybe on the weekends. Sunday is a good day for me to do some like acknowledgements and, you know, social media calendar and things like that. I will say that I have also met founders who also have the same mindset and mentality. So that community of feeling like you're not the only person in the space doing this, I think is helpful as well too. So it's not easy. It's a delicate balancing act. When you know that you're working on something that you truly believe in, that kind of helps also with pushing through.
Yeah. Definitely being around those like-minded individuals is key on this journey. And also, Renee, for you, you mentioned your co-founders at KBM Spices and Things. So what do problem-solving moments look like for you all?
It's making sure we can have a meeting, sitting down, really getting to the real nut part of the problem, solve it, like stripping out the problem part. Are we having this problem? Why are we having this problem? How do we get out of having this problem? And then being willing to move past the problem. I mean, it's really hard. It's bouncing ideas back and forth, saying, does this work? Okay, so will this really work? And if it doesn't, how do we pivot? It's a constant pivot. It's sitting there struggling, arguing, disagreeing, collaborating, then going back to arguing and then figuring out, okay, we got to get past this. Let's see who could do what. No, I don't have capacity. So maybe somebody else will do it this time. You know, we all have different spheres. Someone does communication. Another person does marketing and networking. Then there's the general manager. But then that's not working. So let's kind of figure out who could do what, when, and where. And maybe I don't have the capacity this week or this month. And you all have to do it. And then I'll come more back into the fray. I mean, problem solving, a lot of it is communication. So if you don't have that, you're in deep trouble. It's constant communication of how to solve a problem, arguing and disagreeing whether there is a problem, how to figure out how to move past it, being willing to fail because failure is success, being able to fall down and then get back up. But overall, no matter what, it's communication. That's really the heart of everything.
Really is. And Kashun, are there any specific moments working with young people that were particularly challenging for you? Like maybe it was a specific activity or a specific reaction from one of the young community members and that posed a challenge?
Yes, we do get some of the students who are just not interested at all for various reasons. It can be maybe they don't want to get their hands dirty. Maybe they're just not interested in gardening. Maybe culturally, they might not be able to participate in the activity. And I think what you want to do is, if they seem like they're interested, but there's a barrier there, you try to find a way for them to also support the activity. So for example, I always try to get the perspective of a student when we're doing this work. Organically, it makes sense if it's coming from their vantage point. So we've had cases where if a student can't participate or they don't want to, then maybe we'll give them a camera and say, hey, do you mind taking pictures of your classmates or taking pictures of the stakeholders here? Like that way, you're engaged in a way, but you're not doing the activity. And I think sometimes also just giving them grace, right? Like this is something that's supposed to be good for your mind, body, and soul. For whatever reason, this is not speaking to you. Like we're okay. Like we're not offended. We get it. If you change your mind, we're still here for whatever time we're here. But it's also understanding that not everybody's going to get it, and that's okay.
Yeah, that is true. And speaking of the perspective piece, for each of you, has working amongst your respective communities shifted your perspective in terms of your respective ventures in measurable terms? So that's like inputs, funding, or social impact outcomes. And how do you measure impact? Let's start with you, Renee.
Measuring impact. Do people enjoy the food?
Yeah.
Do they come back for more? Do they say, do you have a hotter version of it? The joy on their faces, the licking of their fingers, that's part of it. Another about impact, do people want to talk to you? Do people, when you speak to your customers or clients or other people, are they inspired by what you do? Does it make them think that they can do it? Do they want to speak to you about how you did it? So that's part of measuring the impact. Part of measuring the impact is the fact that I'm here. That tells me I must have had an impact somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So impact measurement is, it's also me asking, am I still enjoying it? Looking at my other co-founders, relationship building, that's an impact. Inspiring others, letting them think and making sure they believe that they can do it at the same time. But yeah, it's a daily thing. It's also asking, do you think we're doing good? Do you think we've made an impact? Asking other people as well. So that's kind of measuring. I mean, you know, you can click off how much you've sold. That's an impact. But how do people feel about what you do is also a great deal of how one can measure impact.
Yes. And what about you, Kashawn?
I know I have to do a better job of having something tangible to measure outcomes. I do track who we engage with in the communities that we serve and things like that. But I think in terms of measuring the impact and the outcome is kind of what Renee said. Once you engage in this activity, did you leave calmer or did you leave happier or did you leave at peace? The way to measure that is sometimes if you're getting conversations about how excited they are to do the activity, if there's questions of curiosity, whether or not if they could do this at home. I remember I had a long conversation with the grandma because she just kept talking to me about the terrarium and some of the plants she had at home and was asking, can she use some of these things from there? And I spoke to her for like maybe 15 minutes after the workshop was over, to the point where I gave her a whole bag of soil to take home. And I told her, go for it. That's kind of my way. And sometimes it's also challenging too, because I'm always in the activity. So it's kind of hard to just kind of step out and go like, hey, how are you feeling? I do ask those questions, but on a scale of 1 to 5, tell me where you were before and after. I'll probably have to get someone to help me with that. But I do measure it just by just the sheer reaction to the person in the activity itself. So I think for me, that fulfills me. And then I go home knowing that we made a difference in someone's day in this way. So I know that's something that funders look at. They want it on paper to say like who you're working with, how many people, and where were they before and after and stuff like that. But sometimes I get so excited to be in the activity, I'll throw all that out the window. So
yeah, definitely. And both of you mentioned earlier how you got into the work that you are doing now and some of your experience personally, and then transitioning that into your own entrepreneurial journey in terms of creating the business. So being that you had your personal experience and now you're in the community, has anything kind of shifted in terms of your perspective when you are working with your community from before?
I think I could say that is always a shifting thing. Nothing's going to stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I always realize that in a strange way. I think it will shift over time. I mean, you think one thing, then another thing comes up, and then you have COVID that happened that shifted everything again. What's going on now shifts everything again. I mean, shifting is kind of normal. You know, it's kind of like plants. You know, you don't see them. They start as a seed. Mm-hmm. Then they become a seedling. Then they get rid of the hypocotyl. Then they get the kind of cotyledon stage. And then everything just keeps shifting over time. The plant shifts. It gets taller and taller and taller. It might be ready for you to harvest it. Or it might be a perennial plant and go into a dormant stage. Shifting is just natural. It's just what is. So everything's going to always shift. People shift. People leave. People come. They go. They change their thoughts. It changes. It's just shifting is a constant. It's just something I accept.
Certainly. And what about you, Kashawn?
I think what may have shifted for me is just ensuring that I'm respectful and mindful of our target audience and our target population. So I think that sometimes I can get so excited about this idea that initially I would go in assuming that everybody would get it. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes that's not the case. Some people are just not going to understand this. They're not going to care, or it's not applicable to them. For me, initially, when I got excited about this, that was something that I kind of struggled with, just trying to get people to understand it or question why they don't get it. But I think that as I've gotten into this work and spoken to more founders and people in different capacity, you just kind of realize that everything is not for everybody. So once you adapt that and you kind of take your own ego and pride out of it, you'll have more fun in this space. It'll also be more impactful to where you're saying, like, okay, for the ones who are interested in it, we're going to do it. But if not, if you don't receive it that way, like, that's okay. Like, I'm not going to take it personal.
Yeah.
But if you change your mind, I'm always here. So I think that initial part, I did struggle with a little bit of sometimes people not getting it. But now I'm at the point where it's like, if this is something that applies to you and you're interested, great. But if not, that's okay. Like, we'll still be here in case you change your mind if you don't change your mind. So.
That is well said. And speaking of Shift still being here, what are the future goals for each of your ventures? And we can start with you, Renee.
One of the goals, increase the product line, yeah. Maybe more teas, just figuring out how to keep one foot in front of us, build capacity. That is really the goal. Have a dedicated space to grow, always the goal. Enhance your footprint, enhance your handprint, but also just keep putting one foot in front of another and realizing that we have to continue to figure out how to get this done. That's really where we're at. Networking, relationship building, just continue to do that. And always sit back and kind of take stock of ourselves, mm-hmm. Figure out what we can and can't do, how we can get better at what we're doing, speaking to people more, client building, building our base. Yeah. I think the thing we really need more than anything is a dedicated space. So I think that has always been our ultimate goal.
Yeah. How about you, Kashawn?
One big goal that I've been trying to put together through various sources of funding and just collaborations and partnerships is I truly, truly want to have a summer camp. Here in the Bronx, just being a parent, there are very few summer opportunities that doesn't cost a significant amount. And when I did some research about learning loss in the summer and just like research around being in green spaces, I feel like those two ideas can be merged with just like a very low cost or zero cost if the right sponsor come along, summer camp. I'm not looking to put anything together that's going to be really extreme, but just to get our kids and get our community exposed to some of the beautiful green spaces that we have here in the Bronx.
Yeah.
But also kind of travel outside of it and visit Westchester County, Dutchess County, Putnam County, just to get a chance to just see some of these amazing places. I mean, they're far, but they're not that far. And I think that for me, that's something I've been working on, you know, chipping away at every year with trying to figure out what does that idea look like. If I can accomplish that and make it as low cost as possible, zero cost, which is the dream, that's the goal. When you see some of these students and you're starting to see that there's not too many summer opportunities, positive summer opportunities here, mm-hmm. I think it's important for me to try to figure out, well, what can I do to support that? And there's nothing better than like the summertime nature. To me, that's just perfect. So that's a big goal of mine.
Yes, that is going to happen because you all have listed the collaborations and relationships that you'll build. So I have no doubt that you'll make it happen. And speaking of, this has been an amazing conversation. I've learned so much. And we have people who are going to be inspired by what you're saying. And they're thinking, what's one piece of advice that they could give to me, an entrepreneur who's really passionate about making an impact in my community, in agriculture or health and well-being, but I'm just starting out. What would you say to that person? And
I would tell them, just do it. I know that's cliche. Just do it and don't be afraid to fail. and I can speak for myself, you get into this space where you have this beautiful, amazing idea. It's all on paper. You have all these metrics. You have all of these different visions, these, you know, resources and stuff. But then sometimes in that moment, you haven't figured out how to apply it to the community. And it's kind of like you're just nervous about whether or not it's going to be received. My advice to that person was to be, just do it. And understand that maybe it may not be the turnout that you want. Maybe it may not be the outcome that you want. But the mere fact that you try the thing that you dreamt about that's going to help the community and support the community, you know, your intentions are pure and it's going to work out for you in some way, shape, or form. But you have to get out there to try it. When I initially, and it was in the cohort, that was something that Esmeralda, when she was there at the time, supported me with. I had these amazing ideas, but she kept telling me, like, when are you going to get out there and actually try it?
Esmeralda Herrera was the Director of Programs and Community Relations at Communitas America at the time when Kishon was a participant in Communitas Ventures Cohort 4 in 2020.
And it wasn't until I tried that first one that kind of had impacted everything else down the line. So my advice would be to just get out there and just put yourself out there, be as vulnerable as possible. But because your intentions are clear, it's going to come back for you.
That's good. That is good, solid advice. Just do it. Get out there. And what about you, Renee?
I would say understand and know why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. That helps you ground yourself because you're going to need to do that. Understanding your capacity, leaning into it, knowing sometimes you're going to have to step back and reassess. Understanding, as Kishon said, you will fail. Pick yourself back up. And just keep going. I mean, really, you can sit there. Don't go for perfectionism. It doesn't work. Everything doesn't have to be right. Just launch. And just keep going. One foot in front of the other, in front of the other.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Kishon and Renee, where can people find you, continue to support you, and continue to see the work that you all are doing?
For us at Cultivators, we have an active Instagram presence, cultivators_BX. We also have a website, www.cultivatorsnyc.org. From there, I can be reached at both areas. And if there's anything, if you have any questions, if you want to support, if you have any ideas, potential collaborations, I answer all, even if it's not applicable, and we'll just figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can find KBM Spices and Things. And also, yeah, KBM Spices and Things, our Instagram account, our Gmail account, kbmspicesandthings@gmail.com.
Perfect. Kishon and Renee, thank you so much for being here today on Communitas of New York. Thank you for the work that you all are doing. And thank you for encouraging us to do more collaboration, relationship building, and having joy while we do it. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that as well as information about the entrepreneurs and conversation in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 2 is produced by Samoon Jung and David Michael D. Gregoria.